to take an intro.
Well, why don't you get your favorite hanging on there? How about this one? You like this one?
Oh, yeah, that one's pretty.
That's pretty right there. Now, come here, let me show you something. I like the Blue Balls.
Nueve. Blue Balls NYCFC. Season 9.
I like the Blue Balls. The Blue Balls.
Nueve.
Blue Balls.
Season 9. Nueve.
Like a MacBook with broken action buttons. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got blue balls. You know the action buttons, the little tabs, the little buttons that open things or move things around. I feel like the... my name is Jake Beckhardt, and I'm your intrepid cohort that I have joined this week, as every week, by my intrepid cohort, Mr. Trey Fillmore. Trey, how are you this week?
No, continue. You sounded like you had something important to say.
You know it wasn't. I feel like the sort of sky blue... color used to be a lot more important to the Macintosh design. I guess it remains in the Finder icon. You can tell I'm looking at my not quite new, my refurbished MacBook. Let me say this too, Trey. I want this podcast to come officially down on the side of not buying computers from backmarket.com. That the refurbished market has gotten bad. It used to be that you could go online and with a few innocent clicks end up with a half-price laptop that worked just as well as if you had bought it new. Maybe it had like a year less shelf life on it or something, or maybe a little bit less memory than it should have, but the functionality was terrific. Not unlike, you know, the death of pirating software, it just feels like they've closed up all the loopholes and made all of the workaround significantly worse if you don't want to spend an arm and a leg you doing your personal computing. And I can't arrest the slow, steady march of time, but I can bemoan it here on this podcast and tell all of our listeners, don't buy on back market. Don't do it. I don't recommend it.
I'm going to tell our listeners, buy on back market. They did a great job with mine. I'm very happy with what I got. And... you know, split decision here at Blue Balls HQ.
All right, that's fine. Undermine me. Not as if that's not the way you play it every single fucking week.
How
are
you this week, Trey? You're
undermining me. I got in there first. You can't hold it against me.
Okay, Britney Spears.
How is it having the wife back in town? Well, not town, I guess. The wife back on under the same roof.
I mean, is getting fucked up every night and watching YouTube till 4 in the morning healthy? And if it is, then I'm very sick again after being very healthy for weeks.
It's amazing how quickly, when you're living with someone, you rely entirely on them to regulate your poor life choices, your poor moment to moment choices, especially between the hours of 12 a.m. and 4 a.m.
Yeah, as they say, with women can't live with them, might die without them. So I'm on the good side of that right now. No, I'm very happy.
Thank God.
This is all jokes. I'm very happy to have my wife back.
Yeah, likewise. Truly, I was up. Every night I got home from rehearsal in Virginia and I said, tonight I am going to bed at 11:45. I'm not going to drink. I'm going to wake up in the morning and do some kind of exercise. And every night I blew past that benchmark with aplomb.
Fuck, man. Do I know that or not? I know that so bad.
Good stuff, Trey.
It's a real motivator. Content. It is a real, like, I understand why people need fitness classes and stuff like that. Like, because for me, it's like, you know, smoking, drinking every night, not working out, saving money, all things, you know, that were, you know, on the wrong side of my life. And how quickly I can find motivation with, I don't want this person to yell at me. And boom, we're back in business. I've never been better.
Are we part of the problem, Trey? Are we turning our significant others into our mothers, our significant mothers?
I think my significant other's okay with that, but I think it's more I think it's more, as long as we are aware, you know, that these are our crutches and we need to start spreading our own wings.
One of these days.
Now, and by spreading wings, I don't mean leaving our partners.
finally escaping the tender trap.
Well, it's like any building in New York, if we're going to bring it back. You know, you can't leave the scaffolding up there forever. It just might take a few years.
Or can you leave the scaffolding there forever?
You can. Some people do. Very unhealthy relationships.
Yeah, right up until the grave. And at that point, who's to say, really? You know, you made it. You made it to the end.
Congrats.
That's points or something. Oy vavoy.
I don't like how this podcast started.
Yeah, maybe we should try something new. Other podcasts do, you know, they have clips of players and coaches.
Cold opens.
They get you on the same page. They do cold opens. They do bits. And we blog.
Yeah. I know. How Marc Maron of us. Come on.
Every time. Is he still going?
Why? Of course.
He's got like 1,000 episodes or something. How are there 1,000 people for that man to talk to?
I don't know.
I guess that's not a real question. That's sort of a typical rhetorical question. But you know what's not a rhetorical question?
How are there people
question?
That listen to this, Jacob? That is the answer to that question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so true. Hey, we have an open door policy, as you know. Just head on over to our offices, which you all know because it's in, you know, all of the press, all the releases. It's in the corner of every tweet. Just walk right in, sit down, and eventually we'll record a podcast. And if you're there, we'll talk to you. Get on over here if you can find us. Trey, we're not going to dilly-dally. We're going to talk about the soccer because it's fun soccer to talk about this week. NYCFC with the 3-2 victory. A nasty little 3 points to take home. Very nice first half, followed by something of a scramble, something of a losing our cool, an offloading of our acumen and a correct read by some of the more talented members of DC's United. What did you think of the match? Did it tell you anything new about NYCFC?
No, I think if there's a story in this match, it's, you know, the slow, it's the continued story of this season, which is the slow realization of what this team can be through the previous performances. What happens when you have certain pieces in? How things look when you adjust here and there? What the mentality looks like? It's all, we're still in this feeling out period, but, you know, things are good. Things are much better than we thought they would be a month ago, I guess, is the biggest takeaway. But in terms of this game specifically, it's, you know, can we hold down the fort at home against a team that we should beat? And the answer was yes. And so, you know, I walked away happy.
Did you feel like, I feel like one of the things that I want to talk about here, right, I think one of the easiest things to talk about when you're talking about lineup, when you're talking about tactics, is the return of Tavon Gray. Perhaps one of the most contested positions. Meech is out this week. Do you think... I felt what, part of what was on display here was a degree of versatility in NYCFC's lineup that we really didn't expect to have locked in so quickly. And that the team seems to be playing more towards the strength of versatility here than you would have expected. I'm fully stealing from Ronnie Tapia's appearance on Blue City Radio right now, and I can quote my sources that there's like that Tavon's inclusion versus like a more physical DC United seems like a really good coaching move, and it had me wondering, you know, about whether or not playing up a degree of unpredictability and a degree of flexibility in terms of lineup was going to be a consistently important part of NYCFC's identity this season. I mean, you can even look to the conversations around captaincy, right? And the quotes from Nick Cushing about where the captain's armband lands. That, okay, sure, we've got like a sort of presumed captain and a veteran captain, but we're not calling it you know, this, that, or the other. We're not assigning a protagonist on this team this year. And that starts to feel very intentional. I don't know. I wonder if you maybe this is too early, straight into talking points. I wonder if you felt that in this match. I wonder if you think that it's something that we're going to continue to see a degree of not only change-ups in tactics, but change-ups in lineups to respond to anticipated threats and skills from opposing teams like DC United.
All very interesting points you brought up there as you wandered about. That's my job on this podcast.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I'm encroaching.
So you brought up a few things. I think we can save the captaincy talk specifically for talking points, perhaps. But in general, you know, I think... Well, okay, you kind of brought up two main points. The first with Tavon. I don't necessarily... I'd have to refute, and I don't share, the idea that it was some kind of response to something. I would say that... Tavon Gray, they handed him a bag in the offseason. It's his job. Like, they would not have signed him to an extension if they didn't want him to be the starter, is my thought. Like, no team would hand a player who's had the position for a year and a half an extension and then sign someone to take their job. I just don't, who's younger than them and less experienced. I just don't think, and it has not played in the system. That's just not my read. So when Tavon was fully available and fully healthy as he was in this match, it made sense to me that he would get the start. I like both the players. I'm very glad with what we have here. A lot of people could say they have a preference of one over the other. You know, they're not the coach and that's not to downplay it. I think people are more than welcome to have their opinion on that spot. I'm glad we have a competitive spot there. But I do think you're also right that he was a good fit in this. You know, he got to bully a kid around Coup de Pietro who had like one or two good moments, but I really liked how comfortable Tavon was in this game. I was about to say, you know, I was thinking after the match, I was like, Tavon was a little quiet, which is good for a defensive player, right? You don't want them to be so involved in the attack that they're turning the ball over so much or things like that. Talk about quiet. I mean, DC United's attacking play was silent. And I was like, oh yeah, Tavon, quiet, steady game. And I look and I was like, oh, he had 59 touches. I mean, he was really, for a team that had less of the possession, you know? So I think I was impressed with what he did. The fact that he was so steady back there and he made some good plays. But to answer your larger question about leadership, flexibility, you know, there is, you know, it's also obviously because we've won two games in a row, but I think that there is, the locker room does feel, it's best case scenario after losing Maxi and Sean Johnson and other players, having as much turnover as we did, you know, the guys are still in a good place. All the new guys seem to have been incorporated in pretty well. The players that could be a little cliquey in the past, they're talking more to each other. They're making friends with each other. There's a lot more overlap. And I think if you're going to have someone be competitive, it's a guy like Micha, who's just like, you know, the sweetest boy. He's someone that, you know, he's not going to ruffle feathers. He's just going to go out there and play. And when he's not competing, he's going to be the nicest person ever. And he's not going to cause any tension there. So, and Tavon's like a pretty aloof guy. You know, he's kind of, you know, he's hyper competitive, but like in a way that's not outward and just makes him a better player. So I'm comfortable with that. But I think that they're, you know, it speaks to the captaincy thing. Like, they all respect Chanel, but that's like understood, you know, he is like the dad. They don't need to, you know, make a big show out of it or whatever. It's like, no, this is a team and the leaders are natural, you know, like people trust, you know, the players because they've been together now, you know, with Talis and Thiago and Gabby and Santi. And, you know, these players are older now and they've come up together now for over a year. So I think you can start to see it too on the field. This is a kind of game that we would have lost last year because of how crazy it got in the second half and how the referee just pretty much lost control of this match. You know, this is a game where people lose their heads. You know, the player that lost their head the most perhaps was Santi. And this was, you know, pretty par for the course if you're comparing to last year, Santi. Like, he didn't necessarily blow up at any given time, you know, to an extreme level that would have cost the team or compromised the mentality, I think, most importantly. You know, they were still able to be dangerous till the end. And that's a good sign.
Yeah, I think that that's right. I think that there's, right, like, it certainly wasn't controlled chaos, but at least it was a chaos that was oriented in the right direction, right? You can say there was a degree of sloppiness or of, set-piece defending, etc., that needs to get resolved. But that on the whole, it wasn't as if there was no deflation and there was certainly no foot off the gas in terms of having like a nose out for goal. And I think you can say, I mean, Santi Rodriguez had a really excellent game, not the least of which being the goal that he secured, but in terms of the way that he punctured and continued to puncture. I don't know, I was thrilled. There's no reason that we should expect this level of performance from Santi given the way that he returned to this team, but it was fully on display here. It was very, very fucking encouraging in terms of what feels like a lot of risks that were taken in terms of setting up this this team's offense. Paying off. I mean, just a lot of shit to hang your hat on here. Not the least being, of course, right, we should talk about it ASAP, Talish Magno opening his account as a number 9. Is it really the story of Talish Magno, though, or is it the story of Keaton Parks?
What do you think my answer is?
I know exactly what your answer is because I was on the receiving end of those texts. Listen, this is, what did you say? Arguably the best pass in NYCFC. No, you said no, of I the didn't. Season, certainly, easily.
Yeah.
It's a dart. It was astonishing. And, you know, no small points to Kufre either. Who my favorite thing about the whole run, I mean, of course, watching Keaton Parks with that expert placement is the most satisfying bit of technical skill on the field. But it's not just that. It's also the speed, the reaction speed, you know? This was not a sit-and-wait moment. This was a turnover that turned immediately into a goal. And it was as if everybody saw it before it even got to Keaton's feet. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really satisfying. That's not just a Keaton goal. That's a team goal. And that's the real answer, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, you know, we joke and want to pump, you know, do propaganda for certain players. But at the end of the day, I think you had it dead on when if you watch that goal again. Just like go frame by frame and see like when's the moment Kufre reacts to what's going on. When's the moment Talish reacts to what's going on, and it will be earlier than you think. You know, there really is, you know, they're pros. There's an anticipation that these guys have, and that's why you bring in a guy like Kufre. You know, I love Kevin O'Toole. I love these guys, but like Kufre's done it in the big leagues. And has that like instinctual attacking mindset that seems pretty clear that that's what this team wants to have. You know, this team misses a Matarrita and they want a player that'll be daring like him. And I think he had a great game. And Talis Magno, the run he made is what you want. That's what we want. You know, that's what we need from him. In fact, I liked how he played this match because it's like, he didn't have to be the 9 the whole time. We don't have to play that kind of style and we can still win. He can be flexible. Santi can be flexible. Keaton can be flexible. You know, anyone you have, Mati can be flexible. And then in the moments where we need Talis to be a 9, if he can be, that's great. And this was super encouraging.
I think it was beautiful. It was
great.
It was beautiful. And listen, the repetition is flexibility, flexibility, flexibility.
Yeah.
I felt like, and this a little bit got off the rails in the second half, we can say it over and over again, unpredictability is a major asset of this team. It's exciting. It's not, and part of it is served by this team not immediately locking in on Talish Magno and saying, okay, we just can deliver the ball to the forward and hope that he does something cute and cool. Instead, it's a lot of analyzing possibilities very, very, very quickly. And it's fucking thrilling. It's really, really good. I mean, the pass to Santi to set up that goal. Also, just like really intelligent playmaking.
Yeah, who was that? Gabby or was that Tavon with the pass to Santi for his goal?
I think it was Gabby, but I don't know. Because I'm a bad person.
But you know what?
Assist credit.
You know what that came from is, you know, and this is, you hit on it in that first goal, is that what's been missing is this turning something, making something out of nothing. It happened in the first goal. There was a lot of ugliness, and then boom, outlet, Keaton, something out of nothing. Boom, Kufre, out of nothing. Talish, out of nothing. The second goal, Keaton and Jimmy just fucking working in the goddamn armpit of a scrum, you know, tackling, mm-hmm. you know, just getting the ball out, and it's the effort there that made that play happen, And the third goal too, frankly, is something out of nothing. So that was really encouraging. And you talk about flexibility. Got to point out, like, Barraza, like in the second half, just spraying the ball. You know, I asked him about it after. I was like, "That's not a City Football Group thing. Like, you did not look like an NYCFC goalie out there in the second half." And he's like, "Look, it's about adapting." This is not a direct quote, but he was like, "It's not about adapt. It's about adapting to what they show us." And obviously DC came out in the second half like with their hair on fire, and that's why they scored their first goal. But if they're gonna do that, he realized it was a good opportunity to like use his ability to pick out guys long and relieve that pressure. And I know it drives coaches crazy, City Football Group coaches crazy, but it worked in this match. I think because you have to execute, and I think he did. But it all comes down to, man, a good extra time podcast segment is like rank the best units in MLS. If you were to rank the units in MLS, like LAFC's forward group or whatever, Philadelphia's goalkeeping stable, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. Philadelphia's backline is a much better example. Like those two would be up in the top five. I think NYCFC's midfield is up there, you know,
yeah.
Santi, Keaton and James Sands, what they can do on the field. It's not conventional, you know, only one of those three players can run at more than a gallop. And, two of those guys have many overlapping, traits, but it works in what we're trying to do. And that's maintain possession, create turnovers and move the ball quickly up the field. And like, that's all three of those guys can do all of those things, you know, and that's really special. And I'm very happy we have that.
Did this game cement for you? I want to go back to Barraza in a second, but, because that wasn't the only question that you asked him. And I think it's, and I'm interested in your takeaway from that as well. But does this cement for you? I mean, last game really cemented the Keaton Jimmy, partnership. And how dangerous it is for how much at the center of this like gameplay style that we're talking about that matchup is. It felt like it was really all cylinders in this game. Did you agree with that?
Yeah. It was really what? Sorry, you mumbled. I just agreed. Oh.
All cylinders.
Yes.
You know, it was
yes.
Exactly what it should look like.
Yeah, I think Keaton was the best player on the field in the first half. And then I think Santi, just in general, how well he played in the first half and continued to the second half, you know, he was man of the match for me. And they made anything work, you know. I really appreciated that.
Do you
lightning round single question for you. Is Pellegrini the new Jesus Medina?
I think it carries too much baggage, that question, right?
It carries baggage for people that don't appreciate Jesus Medina, I would say.
Right, no, sure, yeah, for the meme version of Jesus Medina. But in terms of like a destabilization factor, in terms of a stretch factor, in terms of a sort of dancing on him, like that becomes possible, again, from a team offense perspective, I'm going to say yes. What do you think?
Yeah, in terms of, I don't really know exactly, I can't point to specific things they're bringing to the table, but they're bringing everything, you know, they're bringing their all, I should say. And it works. It's that necessary cog we need. And I'm excited. You were very prescient bringing up Richie Ledesma last week after it had gone cold for about a month. And looky-loo, it looks like Richie's going to be coming any minute. And that'll push our boy Pellegrini to keep doing, I think, to be even more like a Jesus Medina, to even be like, maybe I can't pass it and cross it like Richie Ledesma, because he can't. This team is at the bottom of the league in crosses, you know, so I, you know, bottom three or whatever. So I think if, you know, he's going to realize, no, I got to work harder, which is crazy because he works super hard. I think it'll help push him.
And that's what I'm saying, though, right? Like, you can't imagine this team not making some kind of a use out of a Richie Ledesma, but at the same time, you've got a system that is, like, getting traction, that's got us up to fifth, which is well ahead, I think, of where we expected to be at this point in the season. Most seasons, I think, by now, we're still in some kind of a struggle bus mode, but there's a lot of click. There's a lot of click here. And adding more ways to click appears to be the mindset that Nick Cushing and the and David Lee appear to be in, I think, in terms of these signings. And we'll talk more about not Richie Ledesma, but about signings and about, like, you know, future prospects and all that good stuff as it comes. Let's go back to the back line. Barraza had a good, for someone who let in two goals, Barraza had a good match, right? Fair to say. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I overheard you asking about was about leadership, right? Barraza is also a very young first string goalie in this league or any league. And I am super curious as to, because I think that if there was lapses that contributed to those goals, they are at least in part attributable to the defensive line. That's an obvious fucking statement. What do you get of a sense of Barraza's ability to lead the back?
You know, that might be the one thing I'm not the most convinced on. Also, what do you mean you overheard me?
I overheard you in a different podcast.
Oh, no.
Where audio from you in the locker room was played as a part of this conversation, which I think, I mean, everyone else will recognize you. Your dulcet tones are impossible to mistake.
Okay. Anyways, I don't know why that's embarrassing when we have our own podcast where people hear my voice for some reason.
I think it's, literally constantly.
I think of my voice elsewhere and I get nervous, like I'm naked.
I think it's so nice. It must be it's a real delight once you like get into the, if you're one of these folks who downloads them all, to sort of hear the conversations bouncing around, to hear the difference in the takes, but the fact that everyone is in the pool, you know? There's such a... The vibes are good right now, Trey, in the Podluminati, I feel like.
Yeah, people doing their thing, videos, creating more content. We love to see it. You know us, we're not going to put any extra effort in, but I'm very happy other people are. You know me, I've been this way for years. I can't listen to other podcasts until we record, because I don't want to steal other people's talking points. Every time I do...
Which is why we're a great team, because I steal other people's talking points and then force you to respond to them.
Yeah, exactly. Barraza, I am... You know, I think it's a weird situation. When I say I'm not convinced about the leadership thing, that's not a negative. I think in the situation right now, he doesn't, it's not necessarily, you know, we talked about the fluid leadership, and that's something Nick Cushing is saying about, like, having this leadership group that he turns to and not one leader. I think that this is not new per se. It's obviously not as defined, but, you know, when Ronnie Dyla was confronted back, it feels like forever ago, back in 2020, he was confronted by a leadership group, you know? So there's always, this is in every locker room, but, you know, it's defined now. I was kind of shocked at Nick Cushing's response. You know, he's mentioned the same three or four names over and over again, but now he's like, oh, I met with Chanel, Martins, Alfredo, Keaton, and Jimmy. Like, those are the five, and we know it now. At the same time, you notice, like, Barraza's name is not there. And that, and that's okay. Like, here's the thing. Goalkeepers don't have to be the leader of the team. Like, they can do whatever they, as long as they stop goals, you know? And obviously, organization, like, the goalkeeper has the best perspective. They need to have the set pieces down. They need to know where people are supposed to be. People have to be able to trust their goalkeeper, by the way, is super important. But I don't think we're missing anything. I just don't think he's, like, gonna be a Sean Johnson leader in this moment. I think he can in the future, by the way. I just think it's not necessary in this moment. But I did bother him. Who knows if this made it on another podcast. I did push him a little about the second goal from DC was a set piece that was, you know, super designed and really well executed. And then they did the same fucking set piece, identical, which is ballsy. I don't know if they didn't have another one. But usually people don't repeat set pieces because you're like, well, I saw what happened last time. I'm not going to let that happen again. And we let it happen again. Like, Kufre lost his man. And then Keaton doesn't know that Kufre lost his man, and he gets fucking bowled over. And that happened twice. And I was like, hello, you're the goalkeeper. Like, you should right, notice
exactly.
That. And he's like, "That's the thing." So what he said, what right. he told me was just, you know, details. Like, those are details. And, like, now we can go and look at the tape, and that's super easy to see. And it's like, hey, let's incorporate into our rhythm now, realizing that if these guys are in the same place, to understand, but that's part of his job too.
I agree. I think, right, you can say that, like, your goalkeeper doesn't have to be a leader, but he does have to be a leader. Organization is it when you're giving up most of your goals, I don't know about a majority, when you're giving up a significant number of goals on set pieces, that's exactly where you need someone who can call shots with full vision, you know? It's a learned skill. And it's a learned confidence, and it's a learned attunement. I really think it's chalkable up to... There's a lot of talk about youth with regard to this team, but I think that that's one of the places where it feels the most obvious. And it's harsh to call it a liability between the sticks. It's not. A lot of fucking goals got stopped in this match. We won this match, and Luis Barraza deserves credit. And at the same time, you're not going to get those squeaky clean sheets until you're not just doing your job, but helping other people figure out how to do their job from your privileged position.
And this is one of those places where, 2 points, you mentioned youth. I think Barraza's one of the older players on our team. It's just that as a goalkeeper, you start to understand why older goalkeepers play better. And it's like this. It's reasons like this. The more starts you get, the more you can recognize things and organize better, but and so which is good because that means he'll get better. And it's another thing, like the difference, but the reason why we have advanced analytics and also our own eyes, and that both need to be weighed in different ways depending on the situation. Like, you can tell he has great shot stopping ability and he knows what he's doing and he can distribute the ball, but also, like, the advanced statistics don't love him, but it's been a very small sample size. I hate doing anything less than 5 games. And But a lot of that is because we're giving up good chances. And, you know, a lot, who knows, right? That Nashville game, whatever. That Chicago game, weird. You know, one of the goals was because a player got injured. And then in the last two games, it's like, okay, giving up stupid, easy chances in very small moments of games. And the better the chances, like, the worse he's going to look. And yeah, he should save good chances, but we should not be giving up good. You know, there's a balance to be found, I think. But the double save he had in this match was like, you know, obviously we've talked about him every podcast because having a new goalkeeper is important to talk about, especially after you spend a lot of money on a backup goalkeeper. And but it is good to see the double save he made in this match is like, oh no, okay, my eyes have not, my gut has been founded. Like, he can do it. He can ball. And fun fact, he just hired a marketing team. You know who that marketing team is owned by?
Who dat?
Tony Rocha.
Oh my God, you're kidding.
I'm not. Yeah, had some nice picks today. You can go check it out on the gram.
Why aren't we working on Tony Rocha's marketing team? We marketed Tony Rocha better than anybody.
That's a great point. he's an identifiable image because of what I did for 5 minutes on my phone one day.
And it was effective. And really, that's the best content of all, Trey. The kind of content that comes from an almost a decade of shit posting.
Last note on this game, because we should move.
God help us, yes.
Is something I've noticed, I would have appreciated. We have another Ronnie Dyla here, or at least Nick Cushing has learned a lot where we're second least amount of subs used of any team this season. Hello, Earth to Cushing. Actually, we might be the most. We're definitely the least amount of sub minutes used. Now, in this game, one of the subs, Thiago, we didn't talk about him. Beautiful goal. Quintessential Thiago goal. Outside of the boot. Love to see it. Used his speed. Love to see it. But we still had a window and subs. And this game was, you know, in moments, getting away from us. And I'm sure there's reasons he'd say, but it's like, we needed to waste time. Like a minute. It costs nothing in stoppage time to send a player out and burn a minute. Is a morality thing? I don't know. But this game was screaming for Andras Jason in like the 92nd minute. There's 9 minutes of extra time. Throw a body out there. I don't know. That was my one complaint. He just doesn't like using subs, which I know we're not deep, but.
Do you think that that's part of it? I mean, like,
I think it's definitely part of it.
Is it a matter of, I mean, is it a philosophical thing? Not just a philosophical thing, but a mentality thing, you know? To say the subs won't save you, say you got to go out there and do it, to say that, right, like, no brain farts, like, play the full match, like, know how the fuck a full match feels in your body.
This is why I appreciate you, Jake, because I think that's a very Nick Cushing answer. It's like, we need guys to know how to play to the whistle, you know, to play to the end and not give up. It's definitely what he would say. But it's a 96 minute, you can't burn a little clock. I don't know. Maybe that would mess us up. Maybe we would get scored on. I don't know. It just kind of irked me. It just like I'm fine with Cushing using the least amount of subs in the league because we are not that deep right now. But in the 98th minute, can I get a little something? I don't know. I'm being picky. I think it was a great game. Frankly, the scoreline was much closer than the game felt. You know, they came out hair on fire. The team wasn't awake after halftime, and DC was motivated. And then they scored on a set piece, you know, that we should have covered. Ekufre had the brain fart, and they almost scored again on the same play. But outside of that, you know, it was a great game. It was good.
It was a good game. Should we do some talking points?
Yes.
Talking points. Talking points. Talking points.
Sick, nasty. All right, we've covered the captaincy conversation. That was the Talking Points theme song, by the way. I don't know if you...
we're going to have to find it.
But that was indeed the Talking Points theme song. We're gonna source it for you and play it, and these are your talking points. We've already talked about the captaincy conversation. I don't think we need to go any more in depth about the Gang of Five secretly running this team with Nick Cushing.
Well, it's probably what you're about to ask.
I don't think it was. I was going to move on to an entirely different conversation. Oh, well, then so what were you going to ask?
Is who's the captain for the next game while Chanot's in Luxembourg?
That's a good fucking question, and I don't have a good answer for it. I don't know. Alfredo? James Sands? It feels like roulette to me. And ceremonial, perhaps. I feel like it's whoever plays hardest in practice.
Sure.
I feel like it's nice a sort of, but seriously, do you know what I mean? I feel like everybody knows it's ceremonial, and to a certain extent, it's like employee of the week, you know?
Yeah, but it's fun to talk about. obviously it means nothing.
Who do you think is going to be employee of the week this week?
I would think it's Martins, because he speaks languages to everyone. Like, everyone knows that's not English, what I just said. He speaks better than me. He can speak to every player, and he's the most stable part of this team. Like, he's not, you know, we're not going to move him around. Alfredo, like, is he going to play center back? Is he going to play the six and James as a center back? Who knows? Is Kwaku coming in? I doubt it, but we'll see. Like, who knows? But we know Martins is going to be there, and I think it's important when you're brand new, effectively brand new goalkeeper and brand new left center back, whoever that's going to be, is you know, having to control things. So yeah, I would think Martins would be a good choice, just because he can talk to everyone. I don't know. That's me.
I'd be excited to see it. Well, that's always, I hear you talk about that a lot, Trey, and it's an international team, and requires an international eye. It wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. It makes a huge difference when the literal lines of communication on this team are more or less open. What do you expect other than that on-field or off-field drama from the international break this week? Are we going to be hurting without a Maxime Chanot?
Well, I guess that goes into like the preview of Houston.
Well, then don't talk about it yet.
Okay.
Okay. Keep it to your fucking self. But the only like real meat and potatoes of the talking point that I have before we start zooming way out is the signing of Jonathan Shore. And another little victory lap for the Academy. What can you tell us about Shore? Sure, his name matches beautifully with James Sands. It's hilarious. But do we expect this... What's the gap that we're filling, and what's so remarkable about this player that we felt like we had to pull him up into the majors?
I don't understand a lot. Period? I don't know. But in general, about how we pick and choose some of these signings and what we do with them. It's been on and off. It's been weird, right? You go back to like Justin Hack, brought him up. He played like this preseason game where everyone fell in love with him. And then what, 2-3 years on the fucking bench or whatever, and loaned out to multiple USL teams. And then you get like Dante Polvara, who refused to sign, you know, with us and wanted to try his hand overseas. You know where he is now?
No.
Charleston Battery in the USL. so it's like I don't know what that decision was. I don't know. Like, Clevis Hexari signed a NYCFC 2 contract, but then someone younger than him signs a homegrown contract? Well, I guess we were pretty stacked. We already signed Kwaku at the center back, so that's why you wouldn't sign Clevis, but Kwaku hasn't played, and there's been opportunities. He played like 2 minutes last year, right? So it's like, some of it I just don't understand. Some of it makes sense. Maximo Carrizo, you sign that bitch up. You don't want him to be the next Gio Reyna. And I, you know what? Honestly, working it out and out loud right now, I think they're in a place where it's like Jonathan Shore likes the team. They like Jonathan Shore. I think he had a great preseason from everything I heard. And they were like, you know what? We locked up Maximo, had a great preseason. Another 15-year-old had a great preseason. Let's lock that bitch up too. And I think that's what, I think we had like, a space to spare too. So now we have two 15-year-olds, you know, that are on the senior roster.
Is it also just that there's some like promise being made, right? Like, is there a level of you got to keep the valve open for it, like that ensures you avoid another embarrassment where a player refuses to sign, you know, that you see some kind of a trajectory for yourself inside of the NYCFC system?
Yeah, I guess you want to be like, oh yeah, don't worry about Justin Hack. You just needed a minute to figure things out. Or something.
And Justin Hack got meaningful playtime, man. Like, yeah. However that experience worked out, like, you sort of did him dirty with that summary. Like,
did I say that wasn't true, though?
No, fair enough. But at the same time, if you're looking at a Justin Hack arc and you're like, I'm better than that motherfucker, you know you're going to get a shot. And that means something. You know what I mean? You can trace his moves and you can say, listen, that was not management stepping on skill. That was a dude with promise not quite necessarily delivering on what that promise needed to be, but given more than ample opportunity to do so. And that's a healthy relationship to your development.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, you know, it's I wish I could just sit down with them and have them explain every, you know, I haven't seen JJ. There were some opportunities we could have seen him in the first two games. I don't know. Well, then you have Jason. I don't know. It's just like, but I guess, you know what? Maybe I'm being naive. You know, you can't cookie cutter all these guys. They're all different. They all have different trajectories, different promise. So at different ages, it makes sense to assign them and to give them more opportunities than not. And frankly, it helps with the salary cap. You know, if you're going to burn a spot, might as well, you know, have it be homegrown to dampen down the cap, and or use a minimum roster slot. And then you get this flexibility to have this 15-year-old where he can learn from older guys. So, you know, I don't know. I guess I sound like I'm sad about this, which why would I be? You know, we're signing a 15-year-old who's good. Another one. It's all good. It's just like, my brain is just not in the developing young players world. And I can't really put my finger on it. I guess I was just sour on how the Polvara thing turned out. But you can't be, because not everything's perfect. I don't know why I thought that would work out better.
No, and it's a global fucking sport, man. Yeah. You know, like, it's exactly. It would be different if there was, but it's a chaotic system to try to position yourself in. I think that's fair sour grapes from the perspective of, like, the fandom. But all it takes is, like, a little putting yourself in the shoes of somebody who really thinks they could be the next GOAT. And you can say, okay, right, you're only ever making moves that you think are the right moves for you. The more NYCFC makes themselves attractive at the same time, the more NYCFC says, we are part of your journey to greatness, the more likely it is that that'll actually be true one or two times.
And also when you have players like Sands and Keaton and, you know, their futures may change with this team, you got a kid who has similar profiles to them, who's super young, who's learning from them, you know, boom, next generation.
Boom. All right, do you want to know what we're not going to talk about today, Trey?
What?
The pitch size. Do you know what we're going to talk about?
What?
We're going to talk about podcast drama.
No. No.
Why not?
Okay, fine, but quickly, because I have something way more important to talk about.
Do you know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm referring to,
I don't.
Well, so, you know, the big story out of St. Louis is, of course, that they're at the top of the West an expansion side. I mean, it's really an incredible job. Becoming quickly too big for their britches, they sent out a cease and desist letter to a fan podcast who formerly, the artist formerly known as Soccer Capital, not even the same spelling or meaning of capital, an O instead of an A, forcing that fan podcast to change their name. It doesn't see, speaking of fucking sour grapes, right? This is something, to their credit, we cover a much more litigious or massive a side that belongs to a family that has way, way, way more major stakes and probably way more fucking lawyers. And we have never, I mean, seriously, never received anything other than an under-the-breath stern talking to from the front office or anybody else. This team has good relationships most of the time with its fan media. And this just seems like an incredible unforced error on the part of St. Louis.
Speaking of unforced errors, I really loved that whole, that was great. Really loved it. On your next take, maybe you should get the people suing correct. And it's Sporting Kansas City that is suing a St. Louis podcast. Not suing, sent a letter. I knew you fucked up. I was waiting for, I didn't want to cut you off. That felt mean, but
I think it was meaner this way.
But yeah, Sporting Kansas City is suing. Not suing, I keep saying that. They sent a cease and desist.
Just harassing.
They're just harassing another team's fan podcast.
That's even worse. Yeah, that's even worse. More annoying.
Yep. Do you think it was Patrick?
But it makes more sense in its own way.
Do you think it was Patrick Mahomes who sat down? He's like, now that I'm a part owner of this team, I'm going to fucking let them know.
He said, I've had an axe to grind with Soccer Capital for as long as I can remember. What a fucking bizarre thing to do. Why pick the fight? What does it do for you? Who else do they send these letters to? They can't be the only ones with the trademark. Do they just set a Google alert? It's just shameful.
It's weird, man. And you know what? They have a great relationship with their fan media, too. I hate to say this, not about myself, but the best MLS soccer podcast, in my opinion, or should I say like personality, is Kevincho, who does all the Sporting Kansas. He does the live streams of the live reacts of the Sporting Kansas City games. And he's like one of the funniest people ever. And he's great. And they like, you know, arms wide open with him and have a great relationship with him. So it was pretty embarrassing. And they're also embarrassing on the field. They are not doing so well, but it's just stupid. And I'm glad we have a name that no one will sue us over.
What do you want to talk about, Trey?
Well, of course, I'm going to fucking talk about something we have neglected to talk about forever. And that's, you know what this weekend is?
What's that?
I'll give you one chance, one guess to be a good ally, or else you're a bad ally.
Oh, is this weekend the last weekend of Women's History Month?
Well, apparently for you, there is no Women's History Month because you don't know NWSL is back this weekend, baby.
Oy vavoy.
What do you mean, oy vavoy? I'm excited.
I mean, it's a self-directed oy vavoy. Okay. You're right. No, it's shameful. But, you know, I pay attention to almost nothing, so I'm an That's equal true. Opportunity ignoramus, yeah, as I thought, just demonstrated.
Yeah, exactly.
There's only so much research you can do. You know, the Twitter scroll goes pretty fast. You can't catch every single detail in these narratives. I can't be possibly blamed. Trey, yeah, get into it. Listen, let's supplant the expectable U.S. men's chatter for the international break with a little fast talk preview of what you're going to be looking out for in terms of storylines for the NWSL this year.
Well, let's focus local on the fact that, you know, Gotham is the only team in the area right now, and love them, you know, big fans. I think it's been pretty clear in this NWSL offseason, given comments and actions by both sides. You know, Red Bull had their Women Empowerment Day at their game this weekend, and had the GM of Sky Blue. Oh my God, I called them Sky Blue. Gotham. That's their old name. The GM of Gotham at the game, you know, Yael, and she's great. And they obviously play in that stadium, so they have a connection already. And then NYCFC talked to Brad Sims 2 weeks ago, and he's like, yeah, we're getting our own women's team, motherfucker. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but that's definitely what I felt. So, you know, it seems like it's...
Yeah, but down the line. I mean, like, I know, but there's down the line.
It's clear that Red Bull is strengthening their relationship with Gotham, and NYCFC is loosening the loose relationship they had with Gotham. So it's that does not mean you should not support Gotham, because I definitely think people should go to the games, have a good time. For us, it's like, you know, I get to watch a team and not have to podcast about it. That's a joy. And frankly, last year was hard because Gotham was fucking awful. It was so hard to watch through no fault of their own in some extents. You know, Yael had to clean up a fucking mess, and it takes a little time to get yourself situated and going as a GM. I would say the most exciting thing is, like, she filled in a lot of great holes with some great signings over pretty consistently throughout the offseason. And the biggest thing, which shocked me, and I still don't know if it's a good move, but I admire the balls, was trading the number 2 overall pick for an aged, recently injured Lynn Williams. Lynn Williams is still, you know, literally one of the fastest soccer players on the planet, men or women. So get that shit out of here. She is. It's been clocked. And she, you know, she's returning from injury, but in her time with the U.S. Women's National Team recently, she shows she's, looks like she's at least 80% back to what she used to be. And it's a huge swing to trade the number 2 overall pick. I don't like it in a vacuum, but in this sport, like, if you have Midge Purse, the star of Gotham, and she's not being supported as a player, as a star player should be in terms of talent alongside her, you have to make swings like that. And if you get someone who she knows, who is also a U.S. Women's National Team player, I think I admire the balls that it took for Gotham to make that move happen. So now they have weapons. You know, they have support for Midge. They have someone Midge can support. I think more soccer-wise, it's what it's going to look like. They're going to be exciting, fast, hit you on the counterattack. You know, they still had 2 high draft picks. So the one they used was with Jenna Neiswanger, and she's going to be great as like a 10. So I'm super happy that Gotham fixed all their holes. So if you need a team to cheer for right now, I think Gotham's going to be fun. Worst case, fun. Best case, top 5, top 4 team in the league. And then other than that, you know, it's still all good. It's all good in the neighborhood. Kristen Press should be back at some point. I go straight to Kristen Press. I love her. And but there's a lot of big moves in this offseason, a lot of big trades. And I think that's the biggest storyline, is how these are going to shake out. You know, when I'm not watching Gotham, I'm watching Racing Louisville. It's just my favorite cast of kind of crazy ass players, like unique players that they all just manage to fit together. You have Abby Erceg, who's like an NWSL legend and a women's soccer legend, who just like totally shit on her front office in North Carolina publicly, and they traded her and her girlfriend to Racing Louisville. And I think it was a great fucking deal by Racing Louisville to take advantage of that situation. There's a bunch going on. You know, if you want to talk to me about it, find me. I'd love to talk to you about NWSL. And you should watch this weekend. It's all on Paramount Plus. Gotham plays at 9 p.m. on Sunday against Angel City. I think that's the top of my head, but that will be a fucking awesome game. And people should see it. Should watch it. It's good stuff.
There's one other game,
probably. And it's in FIFA. And it's in, they're in FIFA now, starting today, by the way. Or yesterday, if you're listening.
But on to the segue is, it's a 12-10, and the segue is weak. On to the game that we know you'll be watching this weekend. We're playing Houston, baby. What, Trey? Listen. Oh, my God. All I want to do is ask, what are we going to do about this international break? What are we going to do without Chanel? What can we expect from Houston? And what can we... this bit has been going on for a decade. And do we have a decent shot at maintaining our run of form?
I honestly was going over some stuff today. It's going to be a tough matchup, but we should win. It's on the road. I don't know what the weather's like going to be there. What the weather is going to be like there. Oh my God. But you look, they've only played three games, and the three games, you know, they lost to some good teams, and then they beat Austin was coming off of the most embarrassing loss in CONCACAF history, should we say. On short rest, so that's hard to judge that game, but they look much better. You know, the big thing was they signed, the biggest thing, and it's unavoidable, is Ache Ache. You know, they signed a recent Mexican legend to play in Houston, Texas. The Houston Dynamo play in Houston, Texas.
We know that.
Isn't that canon? I don't know. And if you don't know Hector Herrera, he's like the engine of any team he plays for. And he came in last year and looked out of sorts and could not make a bad team good, I should say, which isn't his fault. But this year, there's been a lot of, as Tom Bogert hinted out, really, was that like there's been some internal pressure on him from the people that are like, this is your team, man. You got to make this team good if you want to be on a good team. And he seemed to have taken that. He had a great game in their last match against Austin. And he's really been I think he had 96 touches in that game. And no one else had anywhere close. Like, he's the guy. And they have two good holding midfielders with him. I mean, he's more advanced. But they have a solid midfield pairing. And they... I think their back line is okay. They're bringing in some reinforcements, a center back from Midgetland, but he won't be here for a while, I think. So they'll have to deal. We'll recognize their goalkeeper, the same goalkeeper that, you know, Alex Callan scored a penalty on in an MLS Cup final. I'm concerned with their attacking depth. They don't really have much. They have like Corey Baird, I think, who feels like he's been in the league for 18 years, but he's only been here since 2018. They're a ragtag team that seems like they can get a result at home, which is what they did. But they don't have the amount of talent that you need to win consistently in this league. They just have, you know, Ache Ache, who can, you know, is... I don't know if he can do it week to week. And perhaps the most important factor in this is their new head coach. You know who their new coach is, Jake?
Who that?
Mr. Ben Olsen. Didn't think you'd hear his name again, but here he is.
I had a feeling I might.
Yeah, you can't.
Floating in the soup of management. He's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. In 10 years, he might coach the U.S. men's team. Who knows?
Crazier things have happened.
Wait, what was he doing in college? Someone check. Anyways, old joke. So, you know, any Ben Olsen team, I'm confident against. Let me say that. They're a good matchup. You know, they don't have good attacking depth, but our center back depth is going to be concerning. We don't know who's going to play center back outside of Thiago Martins. And, because Chanel is a national break. But they do have a solid enough back line. I think we are way more talented, you know, our unit up there facing them. But at least they have enough to survive. In their midfield, you know, we got to be on our toes the whole game. So it'll be an interesting matchup. But we have much more talent, I would say.
What do you see the scoreline as?
you know what? Like a one, it'll be ugly. It'll be like a 1-1 draw or 1-0 win. I think we should win. If we walk away with a draw, it'll be easier to swallow than the Chicago draw was.
Yeah, that seems reasonable to me. We can't really handle the degree of destabilization that we're, I think, anticipating here. So, like, yeah, a 1-0 draw or even a 0-0 draw, I don't think would be... There's a ripple effect, you know what I mean? When you find yourself struggling to control the match, even from the back. And it wouldn't shock me to see no goals scored this weekend. But that doesn't mean that it won't be a fun game to watch or that there won't be interesting shit to talk about. Mm-hmm. And you'll hear about it all next week when we record yet again. We're going to keep our own run of form going, and we'll be happy to hear from you. It's bedtime, baby. Trey, where do you tweet at?
Trey Fillmore. I took a melatonin when we started.
Good.
What about you, Jake?
At Jake Beckhardt, and you can find us both at Blue Balls Pod. The Cash App is in the link tree. So is our merch. Support the podcast if you like it, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye.